The Lions of Trafalgar by Jason Arnop.
"Now look at the place,"
said the Doctor, striding out of the TARDIS into Trafalgar Square.
"Quite different, wouldn't you say?"
Tegan was next to emerge, her face crumpled with disdain.
"I'll have a proper look at it just as soon as I finish smelling it."
Nyssa seemed less concerned by the cloying reek.
"Sanitation wasn't one of the mid-19th century strengths. Didn't Earth's history files call this the Great Stink?" "We're not quite there yet,"
said the Doctor with a buoyant smile.
"Although you'd be forgiven for thinking otherwise."
Tegan glowered at the irritatingly chirpy pair.
"This place was way more tourist-friendly in 1982. Or, I mean, it will be. Funny how leisurely it all seems in comparison,"
said Nyssa.
"Everything's still in constant motion, but at a slower pace."
The TARDIS nestled in the square's southeasterly corner, a nearby Punch and Judy show having distracted people from its arrival. Horse-drawn omnibuses carried the rich past disgruntled beggars. Smoke belched incessantly from chimneys, blackening the streets with soot to complement all the sawdust and hay. Roughly in the middle of it all, an upright scaffolding cage housed Nelson's Column. Tegan frowned. Something was conspicuous by its absence.
"Where's Nelson?"
The Doctor shoved both hands into his cricket trouser pockets, arched his back and beamed.
"Well done, Tegan. That's why I've brought you here on this precise day, the 23rd of October, 1843. Somewhere in this square, there's a dinner. One of the most remarkable in history."
Nyssa and Tegan soon saw it. On top of the column was a long table complete with tablecloth. One man sat at either end.
"Well,"
said Tegan. For once she was impressed.
"It really is a high tea." "Hmm,"
said the Doctor, suddenly less sure of himself.
"Interesting. That table should seat 14 stonemasons. The meal's a celebration of the 4 years they've all spent planning and building the column. Nelson's statue is due to go up there in a fortnight. And yet, only 2 men.
Said Nyssa. The Doctor's brows furrowed.
"Yes."
Tegan shrugged.
"Did you get the day wrong?"
The Doctor shook his head.
"Could the others be running late in traffic?"
offered Nyssa. The Doctor nodded but was blatantly unconvinced. His gaze drifted down the column to its base, where huge stone lions sat on plinths at the outer diagonal points.
"See those lions?"
"Yes,"
said Nyssa.
"They look just like the ones in 1982.
"Exactly."
Switching on his most winning smile, the Doctor stopped a passing woman in a bulbous dress.
"Madam, I wonder if you could tell me how long those lions have been at the foot of the column?"
She looked from the lions to him as if he were mad.
"I see no lions, sir,"
she said, then hurried on.
"Those lions,"
the Doctor told his companions,
"are not supposed to be added to Nelson's column for decades. And it seems we're the only people who can see them."
At the column's base, the Doctor handed Tegan his jacket and peered up through the scaffolding.
"Doctor, be reasonable,"
said Nyssa.
"You can't climb the column. How did the men even get up there?"
The Doctor merely rubbed his palms together in readiness for the climb. Nyssa opened her mouth to say more, but Tegan stopped her.
"Don't waste your breath. When does he ever listen to us? Remember the last time he climbed something really tall? That went ever so well."
A shadow crossed the Doctor's face. Then the brightness returned.
"Haven't had a good climb in a while. That's the thing with a time machine. You could go anywhere. Sometimes it feels a touch easy. Now, go and bother that fellow, would you?"
The Doctor nodded towards the square's sole policeman.
"The Met is in its infancy,"
he noted, using one hand to test the pull of the scaffolding bar.
"They have few resources, which means fewer officers to distract."
Tegan's sigh could be heard even as she walked off. Nyssa gave the Doctor the look of an abandoned daughter, then followed. His instincts jangled ominously as he glanced at the stone lions. Presumably they were rendered invisible by a perception filter, which only worked on people from this time. The Doctor heaved himself up into the web of iron and rope. The two middle-aged gentlemen seemed unconcerned that a stranger was heaving himself up onto their granite platform, his face slick with sweat. They appeared frozen, their hands gripping cutlery poised over their half-finished meals. Only their eyes maintained a fix on the newcomer. Eyes with the cold, cautionary gaze of snakes. Dragging a sleeve across his forehead, the Doctor regained his breath. Determined to mirror their casual gait, he took in the view from over 150 feet up. Smoke had rendered visibility low, but nearby the Thames cut an impressively bold swathe across the city. He finally met each pair of snake eyes in turn.
Now then, you, sir, are masquerading as legendary construction genius Samuel Morton Peto, and you, sir, are masquerading as Thomas Crissell, Samuel's cousin.
The two men spoke as one, their voices human.
Masquerading.
The doctor placed his palms on the table halfway between the pair.
Here's your first and final tip. Humans don't tend to speak in that simultaneous fashion. All of this strikes me as an extremely lazy copy of the original facts, from those four early arrivals at the column's base all the way up to you. So have you inhabited these two noble men or replaced them? Please tell me it's the former.
Peto and Grissel again spoke together.
Who are you?
The doctor's attention shifted uneasily to their dinner plates.
Now, historically, those are rump steaks, but then historically, you're joined by 12 fellow diners. Judging by the consistency of that meat, I can only assume you've literally been having them for dinner.
The men licked their lips. The skin beside their eyes crinkled as, for the first time, they smiled.
Well,
said the doctor, trying to keep his anger in check.
That's a very good way to make a very bad first impression on me.
He slowly paced the table's perimeter, stealing a look down at Nyssa and Tegan. The policeman had moved on and they stared back up at him.
You've clearly meddled with time,
he said,
and taken over the construction of an iconic monument for a truly great man.
The doctor increased his speed, forcing those snake eyes to work harder to track him. He noticed their hands gripped the cutlery tighter. Good.
A tall, thin monument which looks a bit like...
He stopped abruptly and stared down at the platform.
A rocket.
Scanning them for a reaction, he found none.
You need an escape route. A clean getaway, so no one can stop you until it's too late. Ha! That's it, isn't it?
He smiled triumphantly. The impassive duo's eyes locked on him for several seconds, then rolled downwards. They smiled again and their mouths opened. This time, their dual voice was sibilant, alien.
Endoforms, activate.
The doctor's grin gave way to concern.
What are you doing?
Nyssa tugged at Tegan's arm, her eyes wide.
Look!
Even above the square's hubbub, there was an audible growling. Tegan turned to see a stone lion turn to see her. Its red eyes glowed with fury. The other three statues also faced them, glaring down from their plinths. Tegan and Nyssa slowly backed away.
Doctor!
Called Nyssa, unable to stop herself.
Doctor! The lions!
The stone creatures arched and stretched their backs.
Nyssa, you know what the doctor would say, right? Run!
Nyssa was about to agree when the realization hit home.
The crowd can't see the lions. People could be killed. We can't just go. I'm warning you,
said the doctor.
Stop those things right now. What are they?
The endoforms,
said Peto and Grissel together, their eyes now blazing bright red.
Our sentinels. If your friends are important to you, then walk away. Walk away and we shall spare them.
The doctor shook his head.
Not until you tell me what you're doing here.
Nyssa and Tegan stood among an oblivious crowd as the lions stepped from their plinths, landing in unison. A terrible scream rang out, then abruptly cut short. The policeman lay flattened beneath one of the creatures. It strode on as if nothing had happened, glowing eyes focused on the girls. Pedestrians responded with blank shock, staring at the corpse. Finally, two women screamed, and yet few onlookers fled. The lion's paths were set to converge on Nyssa and Tegan, and between the two parties stood a vulnerable human mass.
Tegan, what do we do?
Tegan put her arms in the air.
We make use of my big mouth. Everyone move aside! That way, move aside!
Nyssa ignored her own trembling legs in order to shepherd people in the opposite direction. Only some followed orders. The rest held firm. Most just glared at the deranged women. The doctor turned back from the platform's edge to confront Peto and Grissel.
There'll be carnage. Listen to me, both of you. If this column is a rocket and all you want to do is leave Earth, then I'll help. There's no need for all this. What are you?
We are Sevadril,
said the men.
And we will not leave Earth.
The doctor furiously rounded on them.
Then what will you do?
We will destroy it in 174 years.
Come on!
Tegan shouted.
Please, get out of the way!
A glassy-eyed vagrant disappeared under a lion as if dragged beneath a steamroller. A well-dressed gentleman stepped from an omnibus and was immediately squashed dead, causing the carriage's two horses to rear up in terror. More screams grimly signaled further fatalities.
People are dying,
cried Nyssa.
Leave the square now!
Finally, the crowd began to evacuate, some shooting fearful looks at the girls as if they were responsible for the mayhem. A man sprinted from the empty Punch and Judy box with a puppet on each hand. As a clear path opened between the lions and their prey, the creatures growled and quickened their pace.
Okay,
said Deegan.
Now we can run. It's not a rocket,
realized the doctor.
It's a missile, pointing downwards, ready to tear the world apart. But why 2017?
In that year, conflict rages across the galaxy between our glorious nation and the Charnel hordes. In that year, we will trigger Earth's destruction in order to gain a key strategic advantage.
You want to kill millions as a distraction?
Not exclusively,
said the Severkryll, their eyes crinkling.
It also quite amuses us.
Not for the first time, Tegan wished she was wearing rather more sensible shoes as she and Nyssa charged headlong into the less congested Northumberland Street, waving arms and yelling for people to make way. Behind them, the lion's enormous paws struck the cobbles with thunderous clunks, all the time gaining ground. Any moment now, the creatures would be upon them.
Samuel Morton Peto,
said the doctor.
Thomas Grissel, you are both remarkable entrepreneurs, men who make great things happen. You build great things.
Do not attempt to speak to them,
said the Severkryll.
They are with us, eternally lost.
Oh, so they are still in there. Samuel, Thomas, I want you to concentrate on your most ambitious construction yet. Build a wall between yourselves and the alien consciousness which has stolen your lives.
The two men shook their heads and smiled.
This is pointless.
Tegan slipped on a discarded kettle and landed awkwardly. Nyssa doubled back to haul her up, shocked by how close the lions now were.
Come on,
she said, but Tegan was reduced to a hobble. Sensing victory, the lions roared. Tegan gasped.
We're not going to make it. Do what you do best,
urged the doctor.
Build those walls in your mind. Keep the invaders out.
Cease this,
said the Severkryll, their hands fidgeting.
Cease this now.
Spurred on by these hints of alarm, the doctor thumped the dinner table, making it shake.
If you don't build these walls, the planet will be destroyed. Your great-grandchildren and everyone else will die. Build the walls high and strong, and now... regain control. Regain the lost honor of Admiral Horatio Nelson.
The men closed their eyes, opened their mouths, and howled in agony. Thick, red, serpentine plumes of energy poured from their mouths, arcing into the air. Peto and Grissel slumped forward like puppets. Disembodied, the Severkryll's one voice echoed in the wind as the atoms of those red snakes scattered. The doctor barely heard them. He was gazing urgently over the square, down into Northumberland Street, where the small figures of his friends sagged in relief, mere feet away from four motionless lion statues. The doctor was accustomed to righting wrongs, then immediately making himself scarce. This business, however, had been different. This called for aftercare. Almost 2 weeks of it. Peto and Grissel had no recollection of being possessed by the Severkryll, but trusted the doctor like baby birds. In return, he never told them that their temporary digestive ailments were due to the consumption of human flesh. The duo allowed him inside the column, where he painstakingly disarmed the missile and lowered it into a vertical underground tunnel, which he could only assume stretched for at least a mile, intended to aid the missile's destructive capability. He created a new floor at ground level to conceal it altogether. Incredibly but usefully, the Metropolitan Police were content to write off 7 dead civilians and even one of their own men as having been accidentally crushed by omnibuses in an unexplained breach of the peace.
"Told you there was no need to worry,"
said Tegan, when she and Nyssa rejoined him in Trafalgar Square.
"We've had a whale of a time. Been to coffee houses, chop houses, every house bar a slaughterhouse. Oh, or those houses."
Nyssa raised a hand to shield her eyes against the sun, watching Nelson's 17-foot sandstone likeness hoisted onto the column by awkward steam engine technology.
"Doctor, why are the lions back on their plinths?" "Ah, yes. When I rendered them harmless, they just trotted back. I've adapted the perception filter to switch itself off in a few decades when the originals are due to be installed. There'll be some confusion, but I'd hope Sir Edwin Landseer, their designer, will have the sense to simply cover the lions with a veil and then unveil them."
Tegan stared at him.
"You have a real look of achievement on your face."
"Yes,"
he said, glancing away.
"Well, Horatio was a personal friend of mine."
They gazed up at the monument until the doctor strode off. When they arrived outside the TARDIS, he paused to check what looked like a lamp in the square's corner, then noticed their quizzical looks.
"Oh, this, just a short-range sensor to alert me if the Severkrill ever tried to reactivate the missile. And here's a thing. Come 1926, the Met will turn it into a police box. How very fitting,"
smiled Nyssa as they entered the time machine.
"Indeed. Now let's hop ahead 35 years to the embankment. I'd like to give Cleopatra's needle a quick check over. Just in case..."